Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Monday, June 4th. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Dane Martinez. With me, as usual, I got the king, Scott Engel. Where I am, Scott, it's a little dreary, a little raining, but how is your weekend? How you feeling today, Scott?
Doing okay. Picked up my first football magazine of the year this weekend, so signaling a turn in the calendar, and had a really good weekend. Tout Wars. Jumped up 23.5 points, just outside, a few points right outside fourth place. So GST, I'm in second, 2.5 out of first. And Tout Wars, I'm a few points out of fourth, starting to make a push.
Starting to make your move. That's what I like to hear. Unfortunately, speeds on, you know, in far less important leagues that, you know, Scott has already said, my settings are whack. I'm offering bad trades. I fell a little bit this weekend. I fell down from second place into fourth place, but still only a couple points out there. Scott, also, you're right. You got your, you said your first football, you know, magazine or what have you. I got my first fantasy football question from, you know, people on social media. Asking me about their, you know, like their first wideout to take in a best ball format. And I literally, when I read it on social media, Scott, I got kind of excited. You said that it signals kind of a turning of the page. We're definitely going to keep everybody ready to go for fantasy football this summer. You know, you got the Exclusive Edge package coming out a little bit later on this month. Me and Jake are starting to preview a team by team every day here on Roto Experts in the Morning. We kick it off in the AFC North today. So I hear that. I feel that. Sounds good, Scott. But there is still baseball to be played. And I want to get us started with this Indians and Twins game from last night, because between Edwin Encarnacion and Eddie Rosario, they had five home runs. You know, among them, Rosario with three, Encarnacion with two, all that. You know, as the Twins go ahead and beat the Indians 7-5, trying to keep pace in that AL Central. Scott, what do you think about the power outing of these two guys in Minnesota?
Well, Encarnacion got off to a really slow start, and it's nothing that we haven't seen before. In the first month, he had 158, even though he had six homers. In May, though, 315. With seven homers and 24 RBIs, and so far this month, 455 with three homers. Over the last week, he's hitting 407, five home runs and 13 RBIs. I mentioned the push I made. Encarnacion is my first baseman. So when this guy starts to get on a tear, he can really carry your fantasy team. He's still hitting very well at age 35. As far as Rosario goes, the MLB.com was reporting the last two times Eddie Rosario's family has been in game, he's hit three home runs. So
they got to get him season tickets.
Yeah, that's what he has to do. But Rosario is having that breakthrough year that fantasy owners were hoping for him. 317, 13 home runs, 40 RBIs, an on-base percentage of 352 right now. So, you know, this guy's on fire. You know, the Twins are, you know, mediocre team, but right. they do have some decent fantasy pieces. You're waiting for Byron Buxton to break out, and it just hasn't happened. He's been landing on the DL, et cetera. And Eddie Rosario is the one who's actually, like, been exciting fans and fantasy players. You look at some of his advanced stats right now. the BABIP is at 315. So I think you're certainly going to see a little bit of aggression.
A little
right
bit,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, no. I'm sorry. I was looking at a different player accidentally. He's at 341, little bit of aggression, but his career mark is 327, so not too much aggression there. The isolated power at 257, though, is way over his career mark of 202. So I think that's something that's certainly going to come down. And when you look a little bit deeper, the home run to fly ball rate, though, is pretty much on par with last year, though, which is interesting. And he's hitting the ball on the ground a lot less this year. Last year, 42.4% ground ball rate. This year, 33.5%. The fly ball rate is definitely up. So that it has to be probably one of these guys. I'm just guessing it works.
Trying to go for that launch angle a little bit more. Yep.
But he only played 92 games. I'm sorry. Last year he had 27 home runs. He's got 13 already. He can break that career high that he set last year. So just continue to roll with Rosario. There might be a miniature bit of regression, but not much according to the advanced stats.
All right. So you feel relatively comfortable in Rosario moving
What's
forward.
Not to? 40 home runs over the last two years. Yeah.
And all he's got to do is just have his folks keep coming to the game, and he'll continue his power surge. Hey, Scott, another game I want to talk to you about, St. Louis Cardinals last night. They take out the Pittsburgh Pirates 5-0. Waka is like Fozzie Bear. He brings a no-hitter into the ninth. Come on, Scott. You know you were going to do the same thing. Come on,
No, I wasn't because I hear every – single fantasy analyst doing that.
All right. Yeah. But it's not like you don't go to some of that humor yourself. But in any event, Michael He does go 7-1. His ERA now down to 2.41. Here's the question I want to ask you about him. The term post-hype sleeper gets thrown around a lot, Scott. But I think it could fit a little bit for Waka. I mean, he came onto the scene when the Cardinals were in the World Series. You know, then he dealt with injuries a lot. But I remember his stuff continues to be strong with that curveball. A great year so far here, 7-1, feeling healthy. Is that the most important thing for a guy like Michael Waka?
Yeah, that's a big thing. But 2 years ago, 5.09 ERA. Right now, the ERA is at 2.41, but the xFIP is at 3.77. So the aggression police are coming. The BABIP is only 2.42. So he's been kind of fortunate as well. So right. He's good. He's not. I don't think he's this good. In terms of his pitch selection, though, he's using his fastball a lot less than he did last year. And you're seeing a crease in the curveball, the changeup, and a little bit of the cutter. But his fastball usage is down about 10 percentage points and about 12 percentage points from his career high. So it's an approach change, too, that hitters probably aren't used to as well.
Yeah. Another guy I want to ask you about here on the Cardinals – Scott, is Marcell Ozuna. Ozuna, one of the big acquisitions in the offseason for the Cardinals, coming over from the fire sale in Miami. He hits his fifth home run yesterday, right? Hit his fourth over the weekend as well. But then when I saw that, right, that he hit his fourth and fifth homer, I was like, wait a second. So he was sitting at Memorial Day with only three home runs? That seems to be far less than you would have expected with Ozuna. Even now at five, is probably only on pace to get to what? Maybe 17? That's probably a pace for? You talk about how Eddie Rosario starting to heat up. You know, could the same thing be said for Ozuna? Or is there, because honestly, Scott, I always sell the kind of first year in a new situation. I always think there's something of an adjustment. Can that be part of it? And now Ozuna's just more comfortable. It's warming up. Do you think he'll still get back to the, 25, 30 home runs that we expect? Or should we expect something sub-20 from him? He's only got five so far.
Yeah, the isolated power's down to 102. It's the low of his career. The BABIP isn't hurting him. It's a 319. So,
yeah, he's hitting 272, which isn't horrible.
Yeah, well, but his home run to fly ball rate is very abnormal. It's 10.2% right now, which is 4 points below his career mark. But last year it was well above 23.4%, and he's hitting the ball on the ground more this year. He's hitting less fly balls, So I think you just got to be patient with Osuna. I don't think he's going to be the player that he was last year, but he certainly isn't the guy that he is now. And you know, somewhere in the middle of last year and what we've seen so far, you know, this guy will still hit 25 home runs in the end, but he's not a 40-home run guy.
Okay, fair enough. That's good to know. You know, I mean, hey, Scott, I remember writing a piece for you. I remember at the beginning of the year talking about these three true outcomes and one guy I thought was going to be overvalued as a power hitter, and I said was Marcell Ozuna. Part of it was because of that change of scenery. I always like to wait and see with a new team. I remember that same article, Scott, too. I said two shortstops to keep an eye on would be Trevor Story and Didi Gregorius. Those guys have both also done fairly well for themselves. Another game I want to talk about, and we're going to have some sound from this game a little bit later on in the show. Scott, you were down there at Citi Field for most of the weekend, and so were the Chicago Cubs. I know we're going to be playing some of the time you spent with guys like guys like Schwarber, guys like Rizzo. So keep it locked for that on Roto Experts in the morning. But, Scott, 2-0. The Cubs get a win, and here's what I want to ask you about. Scott, I remember late last week when I said I needed steals for my team and I was going to try to trade Javi Baez in order to get Trey Turner? Well, Javi Baez got me a stolen base yesterday. For those who don't know, he stole home, Scott. Just how rare of an occurrence is this? Can we talk a little bit about Javi Baez? And listen, in a 2-0 game, that steal of home really mattered.
Yeah, that would actually made it 1-0 in Steven Matz has been among the league leaders in stolen bases allowed by pitchers all year long as he continues to lead the National League. And they had a runner on first, and he went to pick him off, and he had the runner picked off, but then Baez worked from home. So obviously the Cubs did their homework there, and Baez is having a breakthrough year. If you watch the video version of Roto Experts at the Park, which is on rotoexperts.com right now, Chicago Cubs edition, Cubs broadcaster Jim DeShays talks about his breakthrough years, thinks he can maybe be a 30-20 guy this year, not quite 30-30, but make sure you watch it on rotoexperts.com. The only thing is on base percentage, you'd like to see more of a patient, disciplined eye from Baez, but otherwise, if you're playing a regular batting average league, you certainly can't complain. Put a dark cloud over what was a really good start for Steven Matz. But John Lester, who's pitched really, really well, 4 quality starts in a row now. And you also can hear from him on the video version of Roto Experts at the Park on rotoexperts.com right now. The advanced numbers point to Lester regressing, but right now he's just pitching really, really well. 7-inning shutout ball yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. 7 strikeouts to go along with those scoreless 7 innings. His ERA down to 2.44. Check that out over on the video edition of Roto Experts. Let me ask you this, Scott, because you mentioned that Steven Matz, you know, not holding runners on so well, right? People running against him. I was going to say the same thing about John Lester, right? You know, so you look at Lester, he gave up some stolen bases as well. Nemo stole a base, and Joey Bats steals a base off of Lester as well. You talk about Matz and Lester. Here's what I want to ask you from a fantasy standpoint. You know, we talk about attacking pitchers sometimes, right? And in DFS, you know, stacking certain lineups. Can you attack pitchers, specifically a guy like Lester, a guy like Matz, for stolen bases as well? I remember, Scott, you know, when we were playing Roto Clio, I used to look when Lester was on the hill and try to pick, you know, the speedster from the other team, whether that was Insigne or Hamilton or whatever the case may be. You're saying Matz is also not the best at holding runners on. Can you try to attack that maybe from a DFS standpoint or, you know, in a head-to-head matchup kind of thing? Can you attack pitchers for stolen bases as well?
Maybe not so much in a head-to-head matchup because you just got to start your best guys every week.
Right.
In a seasonal league. But for DFS, you know, when you're going against guys like Syndergaard and Matz, who both have trouble with this, and Lucas Giolito, I think you want to take advantage, of course. You know, if Seattle's playing Chicago, all the more reason to get D. Gordon in there. But you mentioned Joey Bats, and right now, you know, the Mets got swept 4 games at home by the Cubs and have lost 9 of their last 11. And, you know, I watch Joey Bats, right? Every time he gets in the lineup, he seems to hit. And I was watching him at batting practice Friday, and at least from batting practice, he doesn't look like a 5 o'clock hitter. A 5 o'clock hitter is one who's just good in batting practice. But the guy was consistently hitting balls in the middle and upper deck. I don't know why he's not in the lineup more regularly with this team struggling for offense.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like you said, this team is struggling for offense. You know, it's kind of like try anything almost. You know, Jay Bruce is certainly not necessarily getting it done, you know.
Banged up. He's got the plantar fasciitis.
But
he's
still
got the back.
All the more reason to have Joey Bats getting some at-bats for this Mets lineup. They obviously got to try something to spark the offense. Hey, Scott, I know, you know, we haven't spoken all weekend. I wanted to go back to one start that I saw on Friday. Okay, because this, I think there's a guy that I am now considering inside my top 20 of starting pitchers, and he gets absolutely no love. I mean, this is a guy who had a complete game shutout on Friday against one of the best offenses in the majors. I'm talking about the Washington Nationals. Mike Foltynewicz goes 9 shutout innings, striking out 11, Scott. And he's now, you know, on some rankings, he's, you know, player raters. He's inside the top 20 of starting pitchers. This is a guy who really has had an incredible year. You know, people expected maybe he would start to grow into himself. A lot of these younger Braves having really good years. Folty now, 80 strikeouts in 69 innings. ERA all the way down to 2.22, had a great start against Washington on Friday. But listen, his last few starts, you know, he's been striking out a ton of people. What do you think about Folty? Am I crazy to consider him a top 20 starting pitcher for the rest of the year?
I would say you're not crazy to consider him top 25 or so because, okay, you know, we've been waiting for this with Foltynewicz. And I think I waited too long. In 2016, I hit 2017. I drafted him, and I was disappointed both years, and I left him alone this year, and that was a mistake on my part. This guy was one of the top prospects in the Braves system. They have a tremendous farm system, and you know the word I talked to insiders for the Braves. They said he just can't get his fastball command together. Well, now he does. He's averaging 10.43 Ks per nine. The ERA, like you said, is 2.22. With an xFIP of 3.51, I think at a strand rate of 81.1%, which is 8 points above his usual mark, I think, and a 2.68 BABIP, there's going to be some regression there. But I think to say he's probably top 25 the rest of the way, I'd be comfortable with that.
Yeah, and the strikeouts should play, even if he has some regression. He does have a power arm. Those strikeouts should still be there. Hey, Scott, we talked about, you know, we heard it in the news update in the top of the show. Multiple teams seem to be in on Hanley Ramirez, right? You know, he was DFA'd, so they gave him like 7 days to trade him or become a free agent. That time lapses. He is now a free agent. Let's talk about some possible spots for a guy like Hanley Ramirez. I mean, personally, Scott, I think he's probably got to be in the American League, right? So that the DH is kind of potential. And you need a guy. Listen, if you need a guy to hit against
lefties, he can play some first base.
He can. I still think, you know, I think he'll ultimately wind up with an American League team, so he has that option to still be in that lineup. He's still a quality bat against left-handed pitching, Scott. I can see a contending team maybe giving it a shot for Hanley. Reports are that there's a lot of people interested. You got to figure he signed somewhere this week, right, Scott?
Yeah, probably not Miami, though.
No, I'm saying American League, yeah. And I'm saying some kind of contender. You're right. They don't like him down there. I don't think they like him much in Boston anymore either. But, I mean, you know, I can see him with one of these teams that are kind of on the fringe. You know, could you see him helping the Angels lineup? Could you see him helping, oh, I don't know, one of these teams in the NL West? Imagine him in Coors Field.
I was just going to say Coors Field. You know, might be one spot actually.
Yeah. So I mean, but
maybe Minnesota. You know,
Minnesota
Logan
as well. Some of these fringe teams.
So well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the big boys in the American League don't need them offensively, right? Houston doesn't need them. Cleveland doesn't need them. The Yankees don't need them, right? So with the National League, you have the concern of can he play the field every day and be out there, which maybe a team like you said, like Colorado, would want to take him on anyway. But you know, He should have a job sometime soon.
Maybe Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, that's an option. Remember, they lost, you know, they lost one One Dominican professional hitter in Robinson Cano. Maybe they go and try and grab another one in that lineup. Hey, Scott, over the weekend, you know, a couple of bumps and bruises. You mentioned J.D. Martinez left the game. We have some others. I know Josh Donaldson also went to the DL. Why is this not time for Vlad Guerrero to come up, Scott? Isn't this, shouldn't this be the time if Donaldson's on the shelf for a little bit?
You would think so. I really don't have an answer why the Blue Jays are not doing it.
Is it because of – what's the – Scott, I wanted to ask you because, you know, also this week, the Major League Baseball amateur draft is this week, right? And so when I think of that, another thing I think of, Scott, is like the Super 2 rule, right, with like the playing time. Do we know about when that date is for this year? It's kind of a moving target, right? Could it be that they're just trying to buy out the last year of this arbitration, and whenever the Super 2 deadline is, he'll just come up the day later?
I would think it already passed, though.
Did it already pass? I always felt like it was around the same
time. I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Okay, maybe that's something we look into. Because to be honest, when you say, like, I'm looking for reasons, right, why they would keep him in the minors.
I think we're all speculating, though. I don't think any of us know.
No, that's absolutely right. So, but wouldn't yes, you're right, Scott. Speculation, yes, but Donaldson's now down on the DL. Doesn't this just create like a natural reason to actually bring him up without any stomping on toes or hurting the feelings or anything like that?
Yeah. ESPN was reporting that there was some belief that, you know, that he might come up, but it didn't happen.
You know, All right, fair enough.
When I was researching this, I really didn't come up with anything. He did suffer a calf injury over the weekend. You know, maybe that has a little bit to do with it. I don't know. Maybe. It's, you know, he's having like a historic year. He's having an historic year so far.
Fair enough. It's absolutely true. I mean, but what we are not speculating on, Scott, is that some guys did have some bumps and bruises. I mentioned Donaldson on the DL. We mentioned J.D. Martinez with some back tightness. Who else got banged up a little bit over the weekend, Scott, that we could know and tell some people off the top of our head? There was some other
injuries. By the way,
here's
something from SB Nation.
Go ahead.
Which I did find while we were talking. He said, pushing Guerrero's free agency back a year might save them $30 million if he's good as
advertised.
They'll avoid Super 2 status and they'll get an extra year of team control.
Okay, so that Super 2 deadline is still then a factor. So that's got to be a part of it. So good digging right there, Scott. See, my wild speculation sometimes turns out to not be so wild. Any other guys you want to talk about real quick, Scott, that maybe got banged up over the weekend or coming back very soon that we want to let the people know about?
Yeah, Noah Syndergaard is supposed to return Sunday against the Yankees. The five finale of the Subway Series. Nice. Jeremy Hellickson left yesterday's game with a hamstring injury. We'll have to keep an eye on that. Marwin Gonzalez with a knee injury is day-to-day right now. Daniel Murphy, initial reports indicated that he could return as soon as Tuesday, but then reports came out over the weekend that he was not looking good at all. No lateral movement, no speed, and he's still a ways off.
All right, so, you know, we thought Murphy would get right back into that lineup, but he still could be a little bit far away. Scott, let's turn our attention, instead of looking back, let's start looking forward, okay? We got a lot of things to do here on Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. If you want to join the party for the next hour and a half, the number to call is 844-843-6879. You could always hit us up on Twitter as well, at Spittin' Speeds, at Scotty RotoX. Scott, we got a poll question up, okay? We got a poll question up because we are starting our Face of Baseball brackets today, okay? You can catch these on Twitter. We'll be putting up polls over the course of the next month or so, now that we have turned to June and it's kind of like the boys of summer as soon as this NBA Finals finishes up. Our first round matchup today, Scott, we have an 8-9 matchup. There's 16, you know, seeds. We have the 8-9 matchup. It's Albert Pujols and Clayton Kershaw. Scott, I don't want you looking at the poll just yet. It's kind of 60-40 right now. Who do you think would have the advantage in that poll, Scott? Clayton Kershaw, Albert Pujols for the Face of Baseball.
Yeah, I would go with Kershaw because the career is pretty much winding down for Pujols, whereas Kershaw, you know, still has 4 or 5 years left at least. And although he's been getting injured, is still, you know, in some of those prime years of his career. Pujols is no longer an MVP type, no longer one of the faces of baseball. I think that passed, about 5 years ago.
That did pass him by, but remember, sometimes the casual fan, they only know the people from 5 years ago that were at the top of their game, you know? You'd be surprised to see how many people still think David Ortiz and Derek Jeter are on the Red Sox and the Yankees, but you are correct. In this audience, for Roto Experts in the Morning, I would agree. I would think Kershaw would have the slight advantage. We'll check in on that poll as we move along. Scott, we got a lot to do. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, here's what we got to get in. We got to do a daily DFS preview of some of the starting pitchers on the slate today, Monday, June 4th. We got to get you ready if you're playing, you know, kind of head-to-head or some kind of weekly lineups. We got to talk about pitchers that'll be out there for two starts this week as well. We'll also update the poll here, see who you guys think is the face of baseball moving forward. Our matchup today, Albert Pujols and Clayton Kershaw. We're off and running El Rey de Fantasia and the Spitting Statistician. It's Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Happy Monday, everybody.
Steiner Sports is the leading memorabilia provider for the New York Yankees, Rangers, Giants, Knicks, and the Brooklyn Nets. Featuring hundreds of items from your favorite athletes, Steiner Sports is your source for the best sports gifts. Go to steinersports.com/box and shop our collection of memorabilia boxes, which include 10 gifts for the price of one. We've made one for each of your favorite teams. Hurry, supplies are limited, and these are some of the best deals we have ever offered. So go to steinersports.com/box today.
Chunky Funky Monkey, bring it back. It is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez and the King, Scott Engel, getting you ready to win a little bit of cash, get away with some fantasy baseball leagues. Scott, you were at Citi Field for a lot of Cubs-Mets over the weekend. On Friday?
Yeah.
Okay. I consider that the weekend. Listen, I consider that the weekend because I'm trying to, you know, it's the freaking weekend, baby. I'm about to have me some fun on a Friday. It was payday. Remember, we talked about that on Friday as well. So, when you were out there, Scott, one of the people you had a chance to speak with was Anthony Rizzo. Anthony Rizzo, you know, I told you about how happy I was with his second base eligibility. He was in the news already last week, as we know, with that slide in Pittsburgh. What are some of the things you talked to Rizzo about, Scott?
A variety of topics, including his slow start this year and how he rebounded it from it.
All right. Absolutely. So let's hear some of that right now. This is the King, Scott Engel, talking with Cubs first baseman Anthony Rizzo here on Roto Experts in the Morning.
Scott Engel here with Anthony Rizzo. Anthony, you're having a tremendous month of May after maybe April didn't maybe will go the way you want. What kicked in for you in this month particularly?
Just stayed with it. You know, it's baseball. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. You're going to have good streaks. You're going to have bad streaks. And it's a game of 700 at-bats. It's not a game of 100. So you gotta keep the big picture in mind when the small picture isn't coming out the way you want it.
Does something like that, though, you know, as long as you've been playing the game, like you say, baseball is a constant game of adjustments, but do you come out of a month like that even mentally stronger than before, even as long as you've been playing the game?
As in April?
Yeah, after a month like that, do you feel like you come out mentally tougher?
Yeah, you learn a lot about yourself. When you have bad months, bad stretches, that's kind of what determines you as a player, because anyone could be good. It's easy to be good and walk around and happy. Everyone loves you. Everyone's writing good things about you when you're good, but it's when, those rough patches is how you handle them and how you come over those.
You're swinging in a lot more pitches in the zone in May. Is that something by design, or do you feel like you're being more selective this month?
I just feel like, you know, big thing for me is you take your walks. If I could take my walks, I feel like everything else will come. So I've been walking a lot more, and that's the formula of success for me.
Do you feel it's like a team-wide sort of approach now because the Cubs actually led the entire National League in on-base percentage in May?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of guys that have take each at bat very seriously, and we don't give away at bats, and we try to make the pitcher work as hard as he can against the individual player so the next player, you know, hopefully has it a little easier.
Last year, you know, there was the whole thing when you guys were playing the bunt defense that you had to switch to the second base glove. I don't know if you're aware of this, though, but it also gave you second base eligibility in fantasy leagues. So you know about that. What was your reaction to that?
You're welcome. You know, I hope a lot of teams win fantasy. Now I have some bad stretches on there, and people let me know about it. But overall, I could probably say you're welcome to a lot of my fantasy owners.
Tell us about the Anthony Rizzo Family Foundation for Cancer Research. You're very actively involved in that too. That's not just your name is on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's we raise money for pediatric cancer. We help a lot of families with struggling bills, struggling to pay their bills, the children, and we do a lot of research, and it's something that means a lot to me.
All right, there you have it. It's a little bit of Anthony Rizzo there with the King, Scott Angle. Scott, I thought it was funny. He goes, you're welcome, because of that second base eligibility. A lot of people are using him in that second base spot if they can, expecting the power that would come from Anthony Rizzo. You talked also, Scott, about how he's like, you know, swinging at pitches in the zone, taking his walks. His on-base is up to 350. You mentioned that the Cubs as a whole are trying to do that. They have the highest on-base in the month of May.
Yeah, he was swinging at more pitches, like his zone swing percentage increased in the month of May. In April, he was 158 with no home runs and six RBIs. And he was telling the Chicago Tribune about, you know, how it was a real mental struggle. And you heard me just talking about it just now. In May, though, he had 303 with seven home runs and 28 RBIs. The 28 RBIs were the second most in the majors, only behind Eugenio Suarez, and the most in the month of May by any Cub since Alfonso Soriano in 2008. And then in June so far, he's hitting 361. He does 364. He hasn't homered yet, but the average is still up there. Always enjoy talking to Rizzo. You know, there's a lot of superstars who, you know, won't give them certain members of the media time, you know, if they're not ESPN or Sports Illustrated.
Right.
Rizzo is always good to talk to. Always a good guy. You know, I don't believe that was a dirty slide. There's a belief that wasn't a dirty, widespread belief inside that locker room that it wasn't a dirty slide. It was just baseball. Also talked to him about his foundation because Anthony, early in his career, battled lymphoma, was able to overcome that as well. And one of the signature players of the Cubs. Just a really all-around good guy that's very well regarded around baseball. And you just had to be patient with him. Goldschmidt has been slumping for longer, but Rizzo starts slow, it seems, almost every year. So you have to wait it out with him.
Yeah, fair enough. Like you said, it sounds like a good guy, Anthony Rizzo, even, you know, like you said, had that lighthearted answer around his second base eligibility. But that's
not
part
the first
of why.
Not the first time I've got that kind of answer from him about fantasy. He likes to have fun with those questions. First time I ever asked him, how do you feel when people draft you? He goes, you're welcome. He said the same thing. And he knew about the second base eligibility.
Right, which I didn't know.
As soon as I brought it up.
Well, you got to figure he's been probably asked about it. Maybe not by interviewers like you, Scott. But, you know, fans have probably let him know.
Sometimes.
But, like, when he had nine games and he needed 10 for eligibility, when he had eight or nine games last year, I bet there were fans hanging over the wall at batting practice being like, hey, tell Madden to put you at second one more time. You know what I mean?
Well, they never actually put him at second base. And some eligibility rules, like, have five. What happens is that the way that they did their bunt defense – with the corners in, he had to use a second base glove, technically.
A glove.
He never technically played second base, but the way that the bunt shift was done by the book in Major League Baseball technically made him a second baseman.
Qualified as a second baseman.
Qualified. He never actually played second base, like lined up there, you know, in a regular
He's not in the lineup card as the second baseman.
No, but with, the interesting thing is you talk about how they find out. A lot of these guys will often tell me that they have friends who play fantasy baseball or family who play fantasy baseball, and they'll let them know these things.
Yeah, that could be the way to go. And listen, if you want to play fantasy baseball, what you need to do is go on over to DailyRoto.com, okay? They make millionaires over there, all right? You can use the promo code $1, get a free month of get a month of access to all the insight you need. We talk about Colin Drew, Mike Leone, Drew Dinkmeyer, and the crew over there. They will help you get set up. Check it out. Go on over to DailyRoto.com. You could also, maybe you'll see Rizzo there. If it was a couple of years ago, you would have at the World Series. If you go on over to DailyRoto.com, DKMS. You could also get a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, okay? You'll find the link to play free DFS baseball every day, and the contest is sponsored by DKMS, all right? For so many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance of survival when you have blood cancer. In baseball, if you hit 30%, if you're hitting 300, you're doing great, but in this situation, only 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families. That's where you come in, because that's not going to get it done. You could register. You can see if you are a match, and you can help someone struggling with this disease. Not in the fantasy world, in the real world. Check out to learn more. Go to DailyRoto.com/DKMS. All right, Scott, I also say we go to DailyRoto.com because that's where we have kind of our cheat sheet from the folks out there about what, you know, what can happen in DFS today. We usually talk about the starting pitchers for the most part. Today, you know, on the slate, they're profiling guys like Clayton Richard, Zach Godley, Tehran, Domingo Herman, people like that. I think the top two have to be out west, Richard with San Diego and Godley in Arizona. Where are you going today in DFS on the Hill, Scott?
It's a very interesting schedule today. Now, you have to have your weekly lineups in by 1:10 p.m. Eastern, because the Yankees and Tigers have a doubleheader. But after that, there's one more. The Yankees are playing at 1 o'clock and 7 o'clock, but then there's only three other games, and they're all at 10 o'clock. So it's a very short slate for daily. So it comes down to who do you like better between Julio Tehran and Clayton Richard. And I would say with the way that Tehran's been pitching recently and the park shift that they talk about on DailyRoto.com this morning, I'm probably leaning more towards Tehran. I think he'll get better offensive run support than Clayton Richard will.
Okay, fair enough. What about any of these other lower guys? I mean, if you are, is there anybody maybe in a GPP you might take a shot at if you want someone who might be lower owned if you go really down low? What about a guy like Derek Holland on San Francisco?
I can't trust Derek Holland. I just can't. You're going to have two pitchers, though, in your lineup tonight.
So right, you're going to have to have somebody.
I would probably go Tehran and Tropiano against the Royals.
Okay, right, and that could
I know Duffy has pitched good his last two starts.
Yeah, but you're fading the Royals offense, if anything else, right?
Right.
In that one?
You're going against that Royals offense, number one. And number two, you just don't know when another Duffy blow-up is coming.
Yeah, I hear you. Let me ask you this, Scott. You know, you mentioned only five games in Major League Baseball in total today, right? And the doubleheader, the day-night doubleheader in Detroit – makes up part of the slate, then the other three games on the West Coast. Sometimes on Mondays you see this, sometimes on Thursdays you see this when it's a travel day. Generally speaking, I just want to ask, like, money management, Scott, you know, and if you're playing DFS. Are these days maybe you take off and don't play because it's such a short slate, or do you actually see better opportunity on days like this because it's a smaller kind of player universe, and you, if you think you're a shark and you have the edge, is it better to try and play? How do you handle, generally speaking, days with, you know, such short slates like today?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily duck out because you know, it's more of a limited pool, and you have to take chances on some guys, and especially in a tournament, when you're willing to take a chance on a guy like a Tropiano, you know, that can make the difference in the tournament.
Okay, so Nick Tropiano, someone that our guy Scott Engel is a little bit high on. Scott, I'm going to tell you something.
I mean, if you go homer tonight like I expect you too.
No, I'm
Domingo German, you know, actually has a good game tonight. You know, that could make a difference.
Right, but I think you are right, sir.
Because
I'll tell you why, though.
I'll tell you why. I don't like Mike Fiers gives up a lot of fly balls, and against the Yankees, he gave up 10 runs in the first two innings.
That's true, but that ballpark is pretty big in Detroit, too. So I don't know if I'm going to pick a Yankee to go yard, per se, because that—
Against Fiers, I would.
That, yeah. Okay, all right, so maybe
you got guys
I
who can hit it out of any ballpark there.
You know, we're also going to have to check on a Roto Clio. If I go with an offensive guy, do I have to pick which game, or does it matter? You know, what do you think there, Scott? Do I have to specify which game, or do I just get two bites at the apple if I pick a Yankee today? So maybe I should just go with the judge, you know, and just figure I'm going to get two bites at the apple. How would you play?
If I was going Roto Clio tonight, I'd probably go Tehran and Judge. But, it's like I don't want to go with the obvious either. So maybe I'd take a Greg Bird tonight.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, well, I will take this all under advisement. I probably will take a Yankee in the batter's box because of the double.
I'd have to look at the splits, though.
All right, fair enough. But I think I may go
Topiano. Is Fiers a lefty or a righty? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Let me pull that up. I will find that out for you, Scotty.
And Bird is a lefty, right?
Yeah, Fiers is a righty. So I'll take Didi. Maybe I'll take Didi to yank one as a lefty. But you like Bird as a lefty also.
Yeah, I would take, just because, you know, Didi to me is a little bit more obvious, and he's kind of
really, you think so?
But he's kind of cooled off,
he's down like a 6-7. All right, but so maybe a Greg Bird. Interesting. I will take that under advisement, my good fine sir. Let's keep it moving, though, here, Scott. Remember, at the beginning of the week, one of the other things we want to get people ready for is sometimes, you know, you got to know who the two-star pitchers are. We talked a little bit about some of the waiver ads on Friday. Brandon Williams does a great job over on rotoexperts.com, the mark of fantasy excellence. It's a place you need to go to get all your insight. Over there at rotoexperts.com. What Brandon Williams does, and we love him, friend of the show, he talks about the two start pitchers, right? So he outlines guys like Joe Musgrove, Nate Eovaldi, who came back and had a decent first outing with the Rays, guys like Junior Guerra, Duffy, Odorizzi, and others. Scott, let me ask you something. Conceptually, before we dive into some of these examples, when I think about two-start pitchers, you know, I see people always running to grab them because they want the counting stats, right? They want two shots at a win or a quality start. They want the Ks. But if you have two bad matchups, you know, you also risk getting blown up twice. Is this like do you have to go and try to find these two-star pitchers? Or do you have to still look at these matchups? And if they're in two bad matchups, I would say stay away unless you really, really need the strikeouts or something like that and you have ERA and whip to spare, right? Is this kind of like an automatic, or does it really matter about these two matchups that you have in a given week?
It really depends on who the pitcher is. It's like 2 weeks ago, Bartolo Colon had two starts and he was pitching well, but one of them was against the Yankees and he got blown up, so you don't want to do it. And you can't go find a lot of good two-star pitchers on the free agent list.
Because they're on rosters.
That they're just not available, but it's all about and looking at the matchups. You know, if somebody goes to Colorado, if somebody goes to Colorado this week, like Matt Kuch is not a two-star pitcher, but I'm leaving him out of my lineup this week because he goes to Colorado on the weekend. So it really depends on the quality of the pitcher and the matchup. Like you look at Zach Eflin this week, he's at the Cubs and he's home against Milwaukee. The way the Cubs are hitting, and Eflin's been kind of up and down. I'm kind of scared to use him.
Yeah, I would stay away from him as well. You know, another example, Kyle Freeland. You know, he's home against Arizona, so that's Coors Field. His road start this week is at the Great American Small Park, also a pitcher's park out there.
Yeah,
in
but
Cincinnati.
That Cincinnati,
now, I know
that,
the Reds,
that Cincinnati lineup is not that good, though.
The Reds is not going to blow anybody away. I understand that. But, you know, I'm looking for a better option. Like, for example, Musgrove. You know, he's home. It is the Dodgers who are starting to hit better. And then he's at Wrigley. I mean, these are also not necessarily easy assignments back to back. You know, I mean, Eovaldi at the Nationals, not an easy assignment. So it's not that easy to find people. I mean, Junior Guerra as well has two starts, who may be unowned, maybe a guy you're looking at for this. But he's at Cleveland. You know, they hit the ball. And then he's at Philadelphia. And that offense has been doing it. So there's not really that many that are awesome. Here's my pick of the guys that Brandon Williams lists. The guy I would look at, Scott, what about Jake Odorizzi? I know he allowed 7 earned runs on Thursday, right? But, I mean, his starts are home against the White Sox. That doesn't scare me. And then he's home again. It is against the Angels on Sunday, a better lineup there. But two home starts, I'm okay. I mean, and before that start where he gave up 7, you know, he gave up less than 3 runs of his 6 previous starts. So maybe Odorizzi could be an option for you for 2 starts this week?
Yeah, actually, the rotation's been moved around since that was published. And Odorizzi's
only
starting against on Wednesday.
He only gets the 1 start.
You know, they don't know who they're pitching today and tomorrow.
The dreaded
there's
TBD.
Nobody listed right now on the Twins website. They got Odorizzi ticketed for Wednesday, so I'll definitely use him. He actually lists him, I think, as a 1 start streamer actually, and in the article, not as a 2 start guy.
And, no, he has. I'm staring at it now. But still, if they've moved it around a little bit, he's only going to get that 1 start. So maybe he's not the guy to go for.
No, I like him a lot in that 1 start against the White Sox. Like you mentioned, Odorizzi is he's had that 1 bad start that has really blown up his ERA. He's been a good value otherwise.
Okay, so maybe he is an option. Listen, we also talk, you know, we talk about some of the waiver guys as well, Scott. We talked about this a little bit on Friday, and Brandon Williams kind of agrees. A lot of the guys we talked about, the Max Stassis, the Harrison Baders out there in St. Louis, you know, we talked about Barclaw, who is probably going to wind up getting the next save chance for Miami. Then there is some, you know, kind of 1-start streamers that could have good matchups. Do you believe in a guy like Clay Buchholz maybe? Against the Giants on Wednesday. Remember, in San Francisco, there's a pitcher's park. How do you feel about maybe a guy like Clay Buchholz?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. You know, he's had a few good starts as he's come back from the DL. I don't think he can keep this up for too long, but it's certainly not a daunting matchup for him. So I'm okay with rolling Buchholz out there this week, you know, as a streamer. Tehran, we mentioned as well. He's got San Diego and the Dodgers. I think he's one of the guys that you like. And one of the guys, it's really hard to say, okay, I don't want him in the lineup, but maybe you have to pull him out. Zach Godley has 2 starts, but one of them is at San Francisco, and the other one is at Colorado. Godley's been very up and down.
Yeah, and so if you have to make these kind of weekly adjustments before the lineup's locked today with the Yankees at 1 o'clock, you know, so how do you put those two on the scale? Because at San Francisco, I like that ballpark. But certainly not the other one you mentioned, Scott. So, like, how do you balance these out? Which do you hate more? When you decide to insert one of these guys and it gets blown up, or when you decide to hold them back and he throws a gem? You know, because that happens sometimes, you know. Which do you bang yourself
I,
more
I hate,
for?
I hate when I put a guy in and he gets blown up, because that really affects – It directly affects your standings and your ratios and everything else. Whereas if you leave a guy on the bench and he does well, you know, somebody else can pick it up, or it doesn't at least negatively affect your numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of feel the same way. Like if someone I decided to keep on my bench has a great outing or something like that, I'm like, eh, you know, I still feel relatively good because maybe they're on a hot streak and it makes me feel good about their next start. But when I decide to, you know, when I'm sitting on the fence and they go ahead and, you know, have a big get hurt up or give up 7 runs in the first 3 innings, you know, like you said, there's a huge impact to your ERA and your WHIP, some of the other ratio stats, and it takes so much longer to get back where you were. So there's a little bit of a highlight for you guys. If you need more, go on over to rotoexperts.com. As I said, Brandon Williams doing great work to set you guys up in Major League Baseball. Hey, Scott, when are we going to start seeing more football content on the website in terms of the and you know, start selling some of these exclusive edge packages, because I, like we said, you got a football magazine, I got my first football questions on Twitter. It's starting to happen. So when can people start to expect more content around the NFL on rotoexperts.com?
Mid-June.
Okay. And what are we going to get? Yeah. I mean, what are we going to get? People are clamoring.
Scott, it is football season. Exclusive edge package with over probably over 50 to 60 articles. You know, our draft package is deeper than anybody else's, which is why people like it so much. And we'll probably have some new tools this year as well.
Ooh, that sounds good. And I know also, yeah, listen, once we start getting into football season, we're going to start talking with our guy Dr. A from Inside Injuries a bunch as well. No one can predict injuries, but Inside Injuries comes the closest out of anybody we know. Hey, Scott, I got to tell you something. We got a poll question up right now on Twitter as well. If, guys, if you want to join the poll and interact with us, you can on Twitter, at Spittin' Speeds, at Scotty RotoX, at the all-in kid Jake Seeley, who'll be joining us next hour. Scott, the poll is tightening right now. Okay, it is very tight right now. Clayton Kershaw has 52% of the vote. Albert Pujols has 48% of the vote. I know you said this is kind of a past meets present kind of thing, but this is pretty close. Clayton Kershaw with a narrow lead over Albert Pujols to move on in our face of baseball brackets. Are you surprised this is close, Scott?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised it's close, because Pujols is no longer a true face of baseball. It's you know, he's been falling off over the last few years. He's playing in Los Angeles. Well, they're both playing in Los Angeles, but you know, Kershaw is definitely playing for the more high profile kind of team. But
right.
I guess people are looking at this maybe more as like spanning the career. And
yeah, I mean,
you
know, people in that case, their own interpretation.
In that case, it's very close. But for right now, you Kershaw is getting hurt. You know, maybe maybe that's part of it, too.
Maybe. You know, I think when we talk about the face of baseball, Scott, remember, it's not necessarily like who's doing it still right now, right? It's about that kind of notoriety. Does even like the casual fan know who you are, right? It's kind of about that Q rating, that buzz. You know what I mean? For example, you know, we didn't. There are pitchers like a Max Scherzer, for example, who's dominant on the hill, but is nowhere near as known in these brackets. You know what I mean? So it's not only about your performance on the field. It's also about your perception. You know, could this guy host a Saturday Night Live kind of thing, right? Do people know who they are? And Albert Pujols has been a dominant MVP, all-star kind of force for such a long time.
I don't know if a lot of these guys in the poll could host Saturday Night Live, because you got to be really, really famous. And
Aaron Judge might be able to.
How many people, yeah, like I said, like you said, Aaron Judge, that's a good call. I would say
maybe our
I
top
would say
four
so,
seeds,
but,
maybe, you know?
You know, baseball just isn't as popular as basketball in the NFL anymore.
Yeah. And I think, to be quite honest, Scott, the reason we came up with this in the first place is because we were struggling to wonder who does have that mantle, right? Who does have that title at this point? Because we couldn't figure that out because of your exact point, Scott. Like, nobody is really as popular as football players, as basketball players. You know, LeBron James, Odell Beckham would kill everybody in this poll, right? So it is an interesting thing. And right now, it is close. Clayton Kershaw with a narrow gap. Hey, Scott, only a couple games tonight, but we'll do it all over again tomorrow morning, all right?
Yes, we will.
Absolutely. Sounds good. I'm going to take your picks under advisement. Have a great rest of the day, Scotty. When we come back on Roto Experts in the Morning, we tag in the all-in kid. It is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Say goodbye to the people, Scott.
Bye to the people.
There it is. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is where we cockle doodle do it. And I'm bringing in my guy right now, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. I don't know, how was your weekend, Jake? Are you going all-in, you know, chasing the straight draw? You got top pair? You sitting with a boat and a made hand? How you feeling about your weekend, Jake? How you doing?
I'm doing good. How's it going?
Hanging in there. You know, I'm a little confused, though, Jake. I must admit. I'm a little confused. Is Michael Kendricks on the Browns or not?
I don't know. I don't really care, honestly.
I mean, like, what's going on? This is so weird. You know, like, I usually trust Ian Rappaport with what he says and all these reports, but I've never really seen a player be like, nah, it's not true. Do you think he's just afraid of, I wouldn't maybe want to sign with the Browns either. Maybe he just doesn't want to be associated with that. He definitely took the visit there. I mean, it's just not does it move the needle for fantasy necessarily, Jake, but I mean, this is an odd story. You don't usually hear these kind of backtrack reports. A guy like Rappaport doesn't really usually go to post with it unless it's kind of confirmed. Do you think there's anything behind this, or is it just like just maybe a bad journalism going in there?
I think it's more odd the fact that we're starting with this and not the NBA, honestly.
Oh, you want to talk about game two?
I mean, come on, like why are we talking about Michael Kendricks?
We could talk about Michael Kendricks later.
We
that's
talk about
fine.
Practice?
You know, when I see you, Jake, when I hear Jake Seeley, I think NFL.
The thing is, I don't ever want to talk about Michael Kendricks.
All right, fair enough.
It's practice. That's what I was saying.
Okay. Instead, you want to talk about Steph Curry?
I'll answer your question, but the fact is, I would want to play for the Browns at this point. Absolutely. What's wrong with playing with the Browns at this point? They've turned things around. I told you they're going to be 7-9.
I think they're going to be 6-10, but I think, listen, I in fact think 6-10 might be good enough for second place in that AFC North. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
It's not embarrassing anymore.
All right. So let's see. And you make a good point, Jake, because we are going to kick it into our kind of team-by-team previews. We are going to get into the AFC North, but let's start, as you said, absolutely. I stayed up late. I hope you did as well. The Golden State Warriors go up 2-0. And listen, honestly, we didn't have a chance to talk over the weekend about this, Jake, but I kind of thought that Cleveland emptied the tank. If they were going to steal a game in Golden State, it was going to be game one, right? After the outing LeBron had and the chance that they had to really make this series interesting, I would have told you I thought Golden State was going to blow them out of the gym. They kind of hung around at that kind of like 7 or 8 or 10 point range for a lot, but that for most of the game, but then Golden State gets that working margin. They go up 2-0. You know, LeBron with another great effort, scores under 30, but still like 13 assists. He's doing well, but they need more help. They just need more help, Jake. It's not going to happen.
No, it's not. And honestly, he would have scored, but they yanked him because he wasn't right. Playing the entire game because there's no point at the end. And the only reason they hung around is because I don't think it had anything to do with them. I just think this was another game where the Golden State Warriors were just kind of taking it lackadaisical. That's not anything I want to talk about. It's like the fact is, yeah, they should have stole game one. That was an argument we talked about. We did that on Friday. We already know that situation. There's a terrible calls going every single which way. Last night's game is still the something I'm going to come back to that you and I talked about on Friday, and this is my biggest beef at this point, is, okay, LeBron and his whining. And, look, everybody's done it. Because it's true. Like, look, Michael Jordan complained. Kobe Bryant complained. Mm-hmm. Shaq got tackled in the paint, and he complained. Mm-hmm. But the thing was, is if you look at how they did it differently. And you go down to LeBron James, and what you and I said on Friday is the fact is, it's not just the whining. It's the fact that he's whining while plays are going on. It's just watch you last night. There was a play he gets fouled, turns around, starts whining. He never comes into the screen because he never ran down court. He never got down court, and his team ends up playing 5-on-4 for the next 10 seconds and gives up a bucket. Now there's a 4-point swing, not because it's a 4-point swing of the foul. It could have only been a 2-point swing, but it's 4-point swing because of the fact that he stood there and whined and didn't even get down the court. And that's the problem with it is you can complain about the fouls. You deserve to. I'm not taking that away from him. He's a huge guy, and he does get
fouled. But there's a way to do it. There's a way to
do
it, though.
You're hurting your team by doing it the way he does it. And what I said last night on Twitter, I'm going to say, is it's starting to become boy cried wolf. And not boy cried wolf in the fact that he's lying. It's
locomotives cried wolf.
Yeah. It's boy cried wolf because the refs are starting to tune him out. If you're going to do it all of the time, it becomes like white noise to them.
Yep. I think that's true. I say that all the time with different things. Like a pet peeve of mine, Jake, in our society, everyone is so quick to say, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Like, so quickly. And it devalues the word over time, right? So when you start saying the way these guys, you know, are lobbying for calls or throwing his hands up in the air, even a guy like LeBron, Jake, who, you know, in the NBA has, like, maybe, quote-unquote, earned the right to do some of that. But when you go over the top and you do it so consistently, so much, it starts to lose its value. We say the same thing with coaches' messages getting stale. If you start to do it so many times, like you said, it's kind of like crying wolf, and the refs won't respond to it in the same kind of way. Whether you have a case or not, you know, at some point, the refs are just going to be like, all right, man, I've heard this before out of you. Just leave me alone. I think Ty Lue got a technical foul call. The same, they were also, you know, kind of lobbying for some call that should have happened. But it is, you're right, it's the way they go about it, not necessarily if you have a gripe with the call one way or another. But here's the thing, Jake, I don't expect that to change, you know, because LeBron thinks he's on this kind of like enlightened, aloof pedestal. So I think he probably believes he has the ability to do that, even if no other players do. Like, I've seen him also telling his teammates to not, you know, kind of argue calls. I saw him tell Tristan Thompson, tell J.R. Smith today to, like, cool it so that he could take on the mantle of having the arguments. Maybe he thinks it's better received if it's coming from the king.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is, again, Michael Jordan, all of them got calls. All of them get theirs at some point. And the fact is, it's how you handle it. And again, you can only do so much because he does get fouled a lot. But there are a lot of missed calls both ways. I mean, honestly, you could go the other direction, too. How many times is he throwing the forearm to somebody while he's going into paint and driving for the lineup? And nobody calls that. And you know what the argument people say is, people then go, well, you know, that's because he's so strong and he's getting contact, so he has to fight it off, too. Like, well, why? Well, I mean, that's technically an offensive foul. So you can look at it all ways. The truth is we haven't seen anybody like him size-wise since Shaq that kind of screws up the position. And people will understand, he screws everything up because of how big he is, and then he can play all the positions, and he does. At the same time, like you said, is you can't keep doing it because you're never going to get your calls, and you're almost kind of making it worse. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if some referees don't call as much because they get annoyed with him, and they're just kind of like, right. Whatever, shut up, LeBron. Well, you know, it's like,
I'll show him.
it's holding the football. Like, you can call offensive holding every single play if you really wanted to, and you could pretty much call foul every single drive through the lane if you really wanted to, and I think that's part of the problem, too.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about, you know, I think it's an apt comparison, Jake, to compare him to Shaq, right? Shaq is someone who was getting a ton of contact, but it just didn't look like it was impacting him, you know, and that's part of what the refs view as well, right? You know, that's where, like, the flopping comes into play, right? To try and make it look like it's having more of an impact. And Shaq down low, if he bodies you, if he throws an elbow, it's the same technical move that other guys are doing, but it just looks like it has so much of a bigger impact that it looks like it warrants a foul. And LeBron James is kind of a specimen unlike any we have ever seen in the NBA. I always, side note, Jake, but I always with my friends used to always talk about, like, if the aliens came down and were like, listen, put up your best human for something that was alien ball, and we don't know what alien ball entails, and we just had to put up our best athlete on the planet Earth, it's got to be LeBron James, right? You know, if you had no idea what kind of competition to represent the human race, it would have to be LeBron just because of his athleticism. The one person who kind of got me on a loophole was like, listen, if 2/3 of the earth are covered by water, maybe you want to put Michael Phelps out there first. But I'm putting LeBron out there. I trust him in any kind of physical competition. So all the more reason that aggressiveness he shows looks more aggressive, and the impact of physicality on him looks less. It is a relative term, absolutely. Jake, can we talk about some football now?
No, sure. As long as it's not going to be more Michael Kendricks.
It is not. It is, however, going to be Detroit Lions running back situation. Okay, because there's out there right now, they're talking about how much they like LeGarrette Blount, but they're also now talking about this kid out of Auburn, Kerryon Johnson, as a potential three-down back. And I find that interesting. We always talk about, you know, the committees, the timeshares, the workhorses. No one has been successful in Detroit as a running back for a long time. You know, Jake, do you actually believe any of this talk? How do you think it's going to shake out? Because I think it's – LGBT, kind of early down goal line stuff. You know Theo Riddick is there for the pass catching duties. I think Amir Abdullah might not even make the team on the roster. But where does Kerryon Johnson fit in? Could he take over for LeGarrette Blount and be a legitimate early down kind of back and really be a viable running back in fantasy this year? Jakey?
Can you not hear me?
No, now I can. Now I can.
Yeah, I was talking the entire time. Let's just continue. But in any case, he's going to be what they wanted Amir Abdullah to be. It's going to be a timeshare. And for anybody thinking differently is ignorant, honestly. You expect, these are the same people that think they're going to be able to figure out the Patriots' backfield. I mean, that's really what it is. It's the fact that he could lead the way in touches. That's sure. That's definitely what he's going to do. He's still going to share with LeGarrette Blount. He's still going to share with Theo Riddick. Theo Riddick's not losing that role. Theo Riddick's never going to lose that role because Theo Riddick is way too daggone good in that role. Sure. Theo Riddick is always going to be the pass catcher, and he's going to have fringe flex kind of RB, maybe even RB2 value in PPR. The fact is, you give him his touches. You give LeGarrette Blount, even if you say LeGarrette Blount only gets 4 to 6, 5 to 7. We don't even give him that many touches per game, but he's going to get those, probably a couple of the goal line touches, and then you leave the rest for the team that passed the second most in football last year and has been one of the top five passing teams the past 5 years. Yes, it's a different team now, but at the same time, what is he coming from? He's coming for the Patriots. He's coming for the Patriots, who split the backfield. Right. Why is anybody thinking Kerryon Johnson is going to be their savior in fantasy is beyond me.
All right, fair enough. I mean, we could have a situation in Detroit where Kerryon Johnson leads the team in rushing yards, LeGarrette Blount leads the team in touchdowns, and Theo Riddick leads the team in receptions out of the running back room. So if you want to make sense of that, I got a bridge I can sell you as well. The Patriots running back room, a great analogy. Last piece of news and notes before we dive into our team profile today, Jake. You know, again, it is, you know, early June, but Gronk made headlines by not showing up to the first OTAs. He says he is going to be a full go this time around at minicamp. Here's my question for you, Jake. Honestly, if you're Gronk, you know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, will he even come back, right? Will he retire? If you're Gronk, honestly, Jake, what's there left to prove? Why not retire? Honestly, if you're Gronk, I mean, people already consider you a Hall of Fame tight end. You've already won Super Bowls. You've already kind of like boosted your brand to a point where you could be a pitchman for everything under the sun. You are one of the rare athletes who can do cameos in sitcoms as yourself, you know, like along with maybe Snoop Dogg as the only people who could do that. Like, why? What's there left for Gronk to prove? Why continue to do this? If you're Gronk, if you have any doubt about your long-term health or anything like that, what's motivating him to keep on going out there? It's certainly not his fantasy football teams. Why do this if you're Gronk?
Because you're one of the best in the game to continue to play in the game? Why wouldn't you keep playing the game?
At some point, you see players retire all the time in their late 20s these days, Jake. This between the player safety issues. But, like, there's nothing left to prove for him.
Yeah, there is another Super Bowl. Putting up records at tight end. There's plenty of things.
Isn't he already widely known as the greatest tight end of all time? Isn't he already a Hall of Famer? Doesn't he already have rings? No?
No, you can make it the bit. If he retires today, is the greatest tight end of all time? I think a lot of people will.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Retire today.
Maybe Tony Gonzalez is still best.
Yeah, I think there's a couple you can make an argument for, and I don't think the fact that if you say right now he's a Hall of Famer tomorrow, what happens if the numbers keep increasing as we've seen him, and by the time he's a Hall of Fame eligible tight end, as we've seen all these other people get past him? You just tell him to walk away.
Talk to his kids when he's 65 years old. Talk to his 30-year-old kids that don't know, can't have a conversation with daddy anymore.
Because that's what we're saying?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that's what you have to put on the other side of the scale, Jake.
No, you don't have to go to that extreme. Look, the fact is, it's football. Every single player at every single moment in every single game is a threat to potentially have a career-threatening injury. He's had elbow and back. He's not having what's wrong with dad can't talk to you anymore.
Okay, but there is, like you said, every player can have that, right? And every player has the risk that is inherent in football. What Gronk has that other people don't are options, Jake. That's the difference. He has options to, you know, still be in the public eye, still make his money, and still be a dancing fool wherever he wants. I think that is the difference. And he still has, he has a great career. My question in general is, like, what's left for him?
I told you, to continue to put up more numbers and potentially win others. This is a Super Bowl winning team with him.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I personally think it's the fall of Rome for the New England Patriots. I don't know how many more years it's going to be in play, but we shall see. Hey, Jake, here's what I want to do. We told everybody that we're going to start going division by division. Scott was really excited in hour number one, talking about he's got his first fantasy football magazine of the year. I'm starting to get questions on Twitter about fantasy football. So the juices are flowing, Jake. I'm starting to get really excited about the upcoming season. And so what we got to do here is get people ready to go on fantasy football. So we talked a little bit about this, Jake. The way we're going to do it, we're going to go team by team. We're going to go division by division. And we're going to start to give you our thumbnail sketches on what, you know, how to treat some of these players. We're going to start in the AFC North. We're going to start today with the Cincinnati Bengals, okay? They are a team where, listen, you know, Marvin Lewis and Andy Dalton have been there a while. But I want to start on this team. You know, the over-under for this team, by the way, also, Jake, is 6.5. In Vegas, okay? So that's where Vegas is putting the line for their over-under in terms of wins. Maybe not necessarily thinking this is going to be the most competitive team, but still a fringe contender there at 6.5 wins is their over-under. When I zoom in on this team, you know, we know about A.J. Green, right? We already know about A.J. Green. He's a top wide receiver. He will be gone in your drafts, you know, kind of depending on the format and stuff like that, you know, late first round, early second round, that's probably where A.J. Green is going to go. Where I want to start with you, Jake, is Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon had a lot of buzz coming out of college, coming out of Oklahoma, you know, fell in the draft a little bit because of some off-the-field issues. You know, when they switched to the new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, last year, they said they were going to try to get him more involved. I don't know that that necessarily happened, but we now have year two. Are you expecting maybe a breakout out of Joe Mixon? Or if I just say he's, you know, he's an RB2 the same way everybody else is, or do you expect something different out of Joe Mixon?
Well, I mean, honestly, why can't it be both? I mean, he certainly has to break out just to be an RB2. I mean, he wasn't an RB2 last year, and it wasn't even the fact of the limited time starting. It's just the fact that he wasn't even good when he was starting. And part of it's the team, part of it's his own problem. But the thing with the team is that they didn't really fix much. They addressed it. They tried to. But is this offensive line all of a sudden going to be top half in the league? I don't really think it is. I think it's still one of the weaker offensive lines in the league. So,
bottom 10 in my
question,
opinion.
Yeah, the question comes down to is what is Joe Mixon going to do in his own skill-wise? Skill-wise, he's definitively better than what we saw last year. Skill-wise, he has the ability to be an RB1 on the right team, and if he starts to play within his skill and not try to overdo it every single play. Part of the problem last year was that every single play, because the offensive line stinks, because the team was struggling, because the offense was struggling, try to do everything, every play. Like sometimes, I always said that about Marlon Mack. I actually said it about coming out of college. Is sometimes you take what's given to you and don't try to dance side to side. Don't at the NFL, you try to do too much, you're going to lose yards more often than you gain them. You're going to get stopped at the line of scrimmage. So the fact is with Joe Mixon is, yes, the talent's there. I think he's an RB2 because of all the concerns. Would it surprise me if he sneaks his way into RB1? No, but I think that RB2, given everybody else that's out there, is where he deserves to be.
All right, fair enough. Hey, one of the things you just mentioned about Mixon triggers a follow-up question. We're going outside the Cincinnati Bengals real quick. Is that a concern? I know you're a Giants fan, Jake. Is that a concern at all about Saquon Barkley? Because I feel he does some of that same thing, right? Sometimes if the play is blocked for 3 yards, you just need to take the damn 3 yards. Is that, if anything, a concern about Saquon Barkley also always looking to try to hit the home run? He reminds me of like a little LeSean McCoy in that kind of sense. And you say if that's an issue, because it's not like the Giants have a great offensive line. It is improving, I guess, with the draft pick and the signing of Soldier. But could Barkley fall into that same kind of issue?
No, because we're talking about two different talented running backs. We're talking about somebody far more talented than Joe Mixon, and he does it once in a while instead of looking to finishing a play. It's not like he's doing it at the line of scrimmage. He's going to do it more at the end instead of just lowering his head or lowering his shoulder to take that extra yard or two. He'll look to dance and get 5 more yards at the end, and that's more his problem. He's already had the success up to that point.
Okay, fair enough. So, you know, obviously, Jake, continuing to feel good about Saquon Barkley vis-a-vis Joe Mixon. Let's talk about the wide receivers real quick. Hey, Jake, you know, I told you about A.J. Green. We know A.J. Green's going to get his 90 balls. We know he's going to get his 1,200 or so yards. We know he's going to score his touchdowns. He's not going to be on many of my teams personally, but listen, he's definitely an elite talent at the wide receiver position. The question I want to ask is about who's number two there. What do you think about this kid, John Ross? He didn't get his island for his 4.240 time. The kid out of Washington only really played like one game. I think he fumbled in like his only touch last year. What do we think about the second-year wide receiver out of Washington, John Ross? We know the speed is there, but what do you think we can actually get from him from a fantasy standpoint? And is he the number two wide receiver, or is it actually still Brandon LaFell?
As of today, it's still Brandon LaFell. He's got to surpass him. That's not the question there. And the whole thing with John Ross is, I liked his talent. I never thought he was amazing. And the amazing part was his speed. And he could be an amazing downfield guy if you want to talk about that. And on top of that, what more can he bring? That's the question. So we don't have anything to go off of. We can't really even base it on, oh, look at all this rapport that he has with Andy Dalton before he got hurt. So the fact is, you say Andy Dalton, what is it going to be? Is he going to be more comfortable going to LaFell? Is there going to be any rapport there? Can Andy Dalton get him the ball 20 yards plus downfield consistently? So, yeah, John Ross, I think, here's the thing. John Ross is being forgotten about because I've done a lot of drafts so far, and I have seen him not being even drafted, I think, in all of them. So you can get John Ross for free, and I'll definitely take John Ross for free. It's funny as I'm watching a lot of these drafts right now where it's kind of like, hey, you know, I kind of wish it was more 14-team because there's people like John Ross sitting on the board at the end of the draft. So, like, that'd be a great flyer I'd love to take right now. But I'm already taking a flyer on somebody like DeSean Jackson, who people aren't even drafting either. And it's like, really, we're writing DeSean Jackson off? I know it's late in his career, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of flyers that I want to take. So Ross could certainly become their number two. He has the talent to do it. He's more talented than Brandon LaFell because Brandon LaFell is a possession type of guy. But whether or not it happens is another question.
Right. And there's my, and therein lies kind of the thing for me, Jake. You know, I understand LaFell is pretty much still the number two, but in terms of fantasy football, I would much rather, like you said, whether it's in the last rounds of your draft or in that first run of waivers after, you know, I would much rather take a chance on Ross than LaFell because for me, you know, and I know it's a dirty word, upside and floor and ceiling, but like Brandon LaFell, we know what Brandon LaFell is, right? And Bavona, if we ever get that Denny Green quote ready online, like he is who we thought he is, right? We know about Brandon LaFell. Okay, but Ross has the potential, the upside to maybe pop and really be an asset if all things come true. So I think even though LaFell is probably ranked ahead of Ross, I would much rather take the chance later on in drafts or in that waiver period on a guy like Ross over LaFell, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. Hey, Jake, one of the things we're going to do with each team is we're going to kind of make a bold prediction here, a little diamond and fugazi action, right? And I got to tell you something, Jake. Here's my – I'm going to call it a bold prediction, but I personally don't even think it's that bold because I am banking against – Tyler Eifert, and I'm banking with the other Tyler that plays tight end there, Jake. My bold prediction for the Cincinnati Bengals is that it will be Tyler Croft, not Tyler Eifert, who gets the most targets, who gets the most catches, who scores the most touchdowns, and it is Tyler Croft who could be in that tight end two conversation, not Tyler Eifert. And this is just because, much like a guy like Jordan Reed, he's not going to be on any of my teams. I'm not going to invest in it until I see it. I have not seen Tyler Eifert healthy since the Pro Bowl about 2 or 3 years ago. So my bold prediction is that that continues and that Tyler Croft is the actual tight end to have in Cincinnati. Am I crazy?
No, you're not bold at all. That's kind of boring.
So be bold, Jake. Go ahead. How would you be bold about the Cincinnati Bengals? I'm looking at a guy who you have been saying is like one of the prototypical size, speed, matchup assets at the tight end position. And I'm saying, you know what? Fugazi, forget about him. It's skill plus opportunity.
What do you mean you have? We've never even talked about Tyler Eifert. Don't say you have.
We were talking about the tight ends. Wait, we were talking about the tight ends like a couple days ago as it related
to
Jordan
Reed. Yeah, and we didn't talk about Tyler Eifert.
I said Reed and Eifert were the same to me that were both made of glass and I want no part of each of them.
Yes, and there was nothing after that. You can't say I said something and then I never even talked about it.
Okay, go ahead. Talk about it, Jake.
Yeah, so you're going to talk about somebody who's been injured for his entire career and then it's called the next guy a tight end two? You know what it takes to be a tight end two?
It takes being one of the 10 to 20 best tight ends in the league. And most people think that's going to be Tyler Eifert. I'm bringing up your ranks right now, Jake. You have Tyler Eifert pretty high.
Yeah, I do. And to say that he's going to miss the season, though, is not a big deal. Okay, so you're getting a tight end, too, with your 350 yards and three touchdowns. What it takes you to get there. Whoop-de-doo. Like I said, not bold. Not at all.
All right, Jake, you have Tyler Eifert as your, like, 11 or 12 tight end. So you're telling people to go ahead and get him, you know, that he's going to be one of the starting
tight ends. No, we've had this conversation before. How many times do we have to do this?
At least one more, apparently.
You don't have to draft them where they are in the rankings. Those are projections. That's what they're projected to do. That doesn't mean draft him there.
Okay, fine. You then are projecting him to do something that I do not think will happen.
Okay? And like I
said, you are projecting something to
happen. To say Tyler Eifert is going to miss most of the season is not bold at all.
My prediction is that your tight end ranking as it relates to Tyler Eifert is fugazi. Everybody listening to Roto Experts, forget about Jake Seeley's
Tyler Eifert prediction. That's not bold. You jump on the bandwagon with all the other people who are saying there's no way Tyler Eifert plays 10 games. So like I said, that's not bold.
So show me how it's done, Jake. How are you going to be bold about the Cincinnati Bengals? What, you're going to think Andy Dalton's a top five quarterback? Is that bold? Where are you going, Jake?
No, because you can keep pulling out stuff and saying, put it in there, put it in my mouth if you want. Do like Scott.
You have 45 seconds until the next break. The floor is yours, Jake.
No, now I'm teasing it. Now you're going to have to wait. This is radio because you're going to have to come back and find out after the break.
Fair enough. I am certainly looking forward to this because
we're going
be
for the J.D. Martinez home run over here.
It better be bold. That's all I'm saying. We got 20 seconds to find out. I know you want to hear what Jake Seeley, the all-in kid, thinks is the bold prediction for the Cincinnati Bengals. We will play a little bit of Roto Cleo as well. And, Jake, the first matchup of our face of baseball bracket, I don't know if you see it, but it is 51-49 right now. We got a close matchup, so we'll check in on that as well. We hear Jake's take on bold predictions of the Bengals. I give you where I think they fit over under. We look at their schedule, Roto Cleo, and more. It's Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Join the family at Modell Sporting Goods. Visit your nearest Modell's and sign up for our MVP Rewards program to receive insider deals all year round. Earn points on every purchase when you use your MVP card to earn Modell's cash back. It's our way of thanking you for being a loyal customer. Upon signing up, receive 10% off your purchase and 15% off your next purchase. It's that simple. Plus, new MVPs this month are eligible to win a $500 Modell's gift card. When you gotta play more and pay less, you gotta go to Mo's.
Welcome back. It is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You got the spitting statistician and the all-in kid. We are talking Cincinnati Bengals. Jake, in true Jake fashion, tries to tell me that I'm completely wrong in being bold, but the floor is his because he's going to show me how it's done. What is something actually bold, Jake, about the Cincinnati Bengals as it relates to fantasy this year? If Tyler Croft isn't moving the needle for you, what say you, Jake?
Well, let's talk about Tyler Croft. Let's say exactly what you're saying. Tyler Eifert doesn't play the season, most of it, and it is Tyler Croft. Andy Dalton at the end. Joe Mixon, huge question marks. We don't know who their number two is. We just said we might be John Ross. It might be Brandon LaFell. Let's look at all these things and then look at the defense, and I'll tell you what the fact is. The fact is, the bold prediction is the Bengals not only finished last in division, the Bengals not only don't win six games, but they also have top five pick next year because the Bengals are one of the five worst teams in football.
Okay. I can go with that. Let me ask you this. Let me follow up on that because I think I don't disagree with you. I think they are fugazi as a team. Let me ask you this, though. Marvin Lewis, like, didn't he somehow get an extension on his contract? You know, I think that I can see here and somewhere else in the AFC North, quite frankly, a completely new quarterback and head coach combination, and we're talking about 2019. If that is the case, Jake, and let's say they go 4-12 or something like that, right? Let's say they're picking number four overall. Let's play this a little further. At this time a year from now, what are we talking about Andy Dalton? Is he still in orange, or is he, like, kind of out there on the free agent market? Is he getting talked about as trades? Like, what is Cincinnati long for Andy Dalton if what you're talking about happens?
No, it shouldn't be, and I think a lot of people are expecting him to start looking towards the future, similar towards it's kind of the Giants situation, is they're expecting these teams to look for a quarterback for the future, and I think Danny Dalton's maybe got another year after this because they don't really seem to have a real solution right now. But it's not Andy Dalton's not long for the NFL, especially if they don't turn things around immediately this year. And I don't think that's going to happen, as I just said, obviously.
Yeah, I agree with you. Listen, you and I have both been talking about how we think the Browns kind of take a step forward. For that to happen, that means Baltimore and Cincy have to take a step in the opposite direction, maybe on the downturns of their cycle. Listen, Jake, I mean, I agree with you. So I don't know how bold that means it is. I also think that the Cincinnati Bengals are on the way down. However, here's what I'll say, Jake. And people can go on over to our friends at mybookie.ag and look at the player props tool. Okay, you can go on over mybookie.ag, use the promo code FANTASY, F-N-T-S-Y. You'll get a 50% deposit bonus. Right now, Jake, the over-under on the Cincinnati Bengals is 6.5 wins. It sounds like both of us think that we would bet the under on that. I think what I would do is I'd have a little player prop. I'd make it 7 wins, and then I'd bet the hard under, because this way I even win if they go 6-10. Jake, are we on the same page? Can we tell the people over at Roto Experts in the Morning to, like, you going over to mybookie.ag, use the player props, set the Bengals win total to 7, and then just go under? How do you feel about that, Jake?
Works for me.
Works for me. Here's one other bet, though. I'm looking at their schedule, Jake, real quick, and we talked about it off air. They have back-to-back non-conference road games early on at Carolina, in the Dome, in Atlanta. Here's the other thing. They have 3 of their first 4 games on the road, but Jake, I found a little bit of an inefficiency. You can go on over to mybookie.ag right now and look at the week 1 lines. And right now, Cincinnati is, as a road team on opening weekend, they are getting 3.5 points at Indianapolis. And Jake, here's the thing. I think this line is predicated on the belief that Andrew Luck is going to be playing and will have played all preseason. And I don't know if that's the case. Even if Andrew Luck is there, I don't know if week 1, there may be some rust to scrape off. I think that could be a value, Cincinnati on the road, week 1 in Indianapolis, because I think as we hear more and more news about Andrew Luck, this line may move in Cincinnati's favor. I might try and hop on that now. How do you feel about that?
There's no way on earth I'm touching that. You can have it. It's all yours. No.
I can have it? Fine. I'll just
Andrew Luck, plays the entire preseason? No, there's no way I'm touching that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And that's why I think as we hear more and more and Andrew Luck, that line will move more and more in Cincy's favor. So I'm going to try and get it now on the assumption that Andrew Luck will play. I think that they're going to go from being, you know, 3.5 or 4-point underdogs. They may become a road favorite as we hear more and more news about Andrew Luck. So I want to lock it in, getting over
who's
a field goal
become,
right now.
Who's going to become a road favorite?
I'm saying it's in Indianapolis. I am saying, as I believe,
I'm saying as Andrew Luck starts to play in the preseason. I'm saying I disagree with you. I'm saying that Andrew Luck gets on the field, I'm not touching it because the Colts will win this.
Because you do believe that Andrew Luck is going to be fine and is going to be able to hit the ground running, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, we shall see. We shall see.
I'm not touching it.
At this point last year, everyone thought Andrew Luck would be ready for week 1. Jim Irsay was like, of course he'll be there. And then, you know, that didn't necessarily happen. So we shall see as it relates to Andrew Luck. But I'm saying if you want to lock in a number now and get ahead of the Andrew
you're saying that. We're not saying it because you're saying you want to tell people to go spend money. I'm not spending money that way.
Okay, fair
enough. Don't put me in that.
Your boy Speeds, the spitting statistician, says that you can get a decent line now. And Jake, you know, in about, 2 months from now, if there is still questions about the progress of Andrew Luck, we can revisit this conversation. Is that okay with you?
I can revisit it all the time. Yeah. It's Andrew Luck.
Fair enough. Let's do that. Anything else about Cincy we want to get into? Jake, you know, we both are down on Anthony. What about Gio Bernard real quick? Let me ask you this. Gio Bernard used to be, you know, we talked about Theo Riddick earlier on in the show, right? Gio Bernard is not at that level, but there was a time with him coming out of North Carolina when I thought he could be a kind of top-end PPR kind of back, you know, out of the backfield. And he has shown in spurts that he can handle between the tackles work as well. What's up with Gio Bernard? Is he like a legitimate kind of handcuff, a legitimate PPR back? Or is he someone that you really don't find too much value? Jake, if I say I think Gio Bernard catches 45 balls, gets around 350 receiving yards and another 350 rushing yards, if I say he gets around 700 all-purpose yards, maybe four touchdowns, maybe, 40, 45 catches, is that something you would be interested in as a bench player?
No, that's what he does every single year. So Giovanni Bernard is always a third PPR value running back. He's not somebody you want as your number two as your starter, but he's been that for his entire career. He's got talent.
But you're okay, like during the bye weeks, putting him in 1 week if you need to, something like that. He could be your fourth running back.
Yeah, why is it going to change now?
I don't know. Maybe the ascension of Joe Mixon. If people are expecting Joe Mixon to take a step, I've seen Joe Mixon also do a little bit of work out of the backfield. They try to get him work that way. If he takes a step, someone has to sacrifice, and the answer would be Giovanni Bernard, no?
No, he doesn't have to sacrifice because the fact is the touches have gone to other people and there's been non-production across the board. So Giovanni Bernard can keep his own role. It's been there. It's not going to go away. Giovanni Bernard's not going to go to zero touches a game.
Okay, fair enough. You do not think that any upswing in Joe Mixon has a necessarily adverse effect on Giovanni Bernard, and you think that he's still viable as a, kind of as a bench running back, especially in PPR formats, correct?
Yep.
Fantastic. We keep it moving, Jake. We got a poll question up that I wanted to get your thoughts on, and then we will, in fact, go to Roto Cleo. This has moved. This has changed throughout the course of the show. Our first round matchup right here today, Jake, is Albert Pujols against Clayton Kershaw. I don't know if you've seen it already, but this has moved. It started like 60-40. It started 60-40, kind of leaning towards Clayton Kershaw. Albert Pujols took a very quick lead. It is now 52% for Clayton Kershaw, 48% for Albert Pujols. We got a tight matchup in the first round of our Face of Baseball brackets, Jake. Where are you going in this poll? As right now, the results are switching as people are getting on and voting at Fantasy Radio on Twitter. You could also find it at Spittin' Speeds, at the All In Kid, at Scotty RotoX. Where are you going on this matchup, Jake?
This is that's not the most recognizable face. This is the face of it's Pujols. It's not even a question. Pujols has been one of the most dominant players in the past decade, plus he's still producing for the Angels out there. Clayton Kershaw hasn't even been on the field for the past two seasons consistently. He's back injuries left and right. Yeah, he's been one of the most dominant pitchers for how many years? Tell me when he starts getting to the career that Pujols has put together. Pujols is going into the Hall of Fame first ballot if he left tomorrow. Pujols is going first ballot if he left 2 years ago. Pujols is amazing as a baseball player, amazing for his career. The guy averaged 30, 30, 100, and 100 to start his career for how many seasons in a row?
Yep.
Like this one shouldn't even be close.
Is he the best right-handed hitter of your lifetime, Jake?
Of my lifetime? I don't know off the top of my head. I mean, I gotta think about that one. Yeah. He would definitely be in the conversation.
He would have to be. I mean, the only other name that I think about in our generation would be Manny Ramirez, I would say, that I think stacks up against him in terms of being able to hit for average and for power. I agree with you, Jake. I personally voted Albert Pujols because I think it's about this longevity, right? And I think about it's what they've done as a career. Scott took it the exact opposite. He said it should be Clayton Kershaw, and it wasn't even close. Scott, though, was thinking more about the now, the present, saying that Albert Pujols is on the downside. And I told him that it's not about that, right? It's about the face of baseball, the notoriety, although neither one of these guys, I think it's like, which of these guys could host Saturday Night Live, kind of thing, and people would know about them. So I personally do think it's Albert Pujols because of the longevity, because he has been the face of baseball for so long. Unfortunately, now the star that is Mike Trout has maybe eclipsed him in that market. But
well,
I
that would be the
you.
Best right-handed hitter of a generation.
I think it's a little early to say that. No, you don't think
it's
early to say that?
No,
you think right now. So wait a second. Right now, I can't say if Gronk retired tomorrow where he would say, but you're comfortable saying if Mike Trout retired tomorrow where he would be.
No, because
isn't it kind of the same thing with Gronk?
I didn't say he was in the Hall of Fame if he hired tomorrow.
You said he's the greatest right-handed hitter of our generation.
Yeah, this
dude gets hit by a bus. If he gets hit by a bus today. If he gets hit by a bus today, you're still going to say Mike Trout with his career stats is the best right-handed hitter of our generation?
Yeah, because you know why? Because if you go back to 2007, He leads all baseball in WAR. He didn't even play most of that career. That's how far back you have to go before you get – you have to go to 2006 to get somebody else into the conversation for the next closest WAR for offensive players. Yes, just because Randy Johnson was the best left-handed strikeout pitcher of our generation, despite the fact that his career was shorter because it wasn't until later in his career. You can be the best at something in a small sample. I didn't say he was a Hall of Famer if he retired tomorrow, because he wouldn't be a Hall of Famer if he retired tomorrow. So it's two different things. It's apples and oranges.
All right, fine. We're talking about, you know, kind of the track record, the longevity versus the actual spike, the Halley's Comet of it all. But right now, Jake, listen, 54% disagree with both of us, Jake. 54% of people say that Clayton Kershaw should move on in our brackets. It's 54-46. Get on out there and vote at Fantasy Radio, at Spittin' Speeds, at the All In Kid, at Scotty Roto X. It's a tight matchup. We started with a pretty tight one. What? What you got, Jake?
I want to go back. I just want you to acknowledge that, because I kind of felt like you glossed it over. I felt like you kind of just like you have to go back to 2006. So 2007.
Oh, that's incredible. 11, that's absolutely 11, incredible. 11.
He's played basically – he came up in 2011, played 40 games. So he's got six seasons – not even six full seasons because – well, now he's got six full seasons because he missed a good chunk of last year. He's basically got six full seasons under his belt. And he's the baseball's leading WAR player since 2007, despite six seasons. By the way, do you know who the person is that jumps him if you go back to 2006? That you're leaving out of this whole right-hander conversation? Yeah. You want to talk about him in the right-handed conversation?
Yeah, I mean, he's in there as well. I mean,
I would take Cabrera over Manny.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, I mean, you know, all of these things we put in a pot. We put them up in polls for the listeners to help us with. Maybe
what, so they can get that wrong too.
Listen, I like to see whatever the polls say. You know, sometimes a pitch is outside the technical strike zone and it gets called a strike. Sometimes there's pass interference happening on the play, but it wasn't called. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's lots of ways to think about it. I know that the All-In Kid has a very Sealy-centric way of viewing it, and that's all good with me. That's why I love you on the show, Jake. You are my man, the All-In Kid. I just like to think that, you know, the idea of, like, having to be right, I'm more comfortable than that. I feel like it's okay. We can have the discussion. And if you want, I could defer to you. You are the boldest. You are the most correct. You are also the most humble I've ever seen in my life, Jake. And I appreciate that. We do have that poll up. And right now, the people are saying Clayton Kershaw. Maybe, Jake, I got to tell you something. Maybe they're kind of doing this in protest. The gap for Clayton Kershaw has widened since we started talking about that. But, Jake, we got one more thing to do. We got to get into Roto Cleo here. Scott is apparently bowing out. You have a huge lead on me, but I digress. Hey, Jake, there's only like five games on the slate today, so it was a little bit hard. Can I tell you who I'm going with real quick, and then you could close this out? I am going with Nick Tropiano today. I like him at home against the Royals. I don't believe in that offense. Danny Duffy's pitched better recently, but he's still pitching to an over 5.5 ERA. Give me Nick Tropiano. And then offensively, I don't know if this is a loophole, Jake, but we got the Yankees and the Tigers in a doubleheader. So if I take a member of the Yankees, do I have to specify which game, or does he just have to go yard in either one?
No, you have to specify. It's like DFS. You got to pick which game. You can't just sit back and
All right, fine. Then that being said, I'm taking the Judge against Mike Fiers today in what I think is the second game. Yep. That's right. Jake, I got to catch up to you. Come on now. I got to try to get some easy guys here. So I'm going Tropiano and I'm going Judge.
Fine. I'm just gonna one up you then. Then I'm just gonna say Luis Severino for the win because he's facing Drew Vanderhagen. So, and then I will take Mike Trout to go against Danny Duffy.
Look at you! Look at you digging deep in the crates here. Both Jake Sealy and the Spittin' Statistician.
There's only five games, like you said. You can't even play one of them in DFS.
It's going to be tough with that doubleheader. It is going to be tough. Only three games on the nighttime slate. But do what you got to do, guys. Hope you hit Roto Cleo. Hope you have a little bit of a better understanding of the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll keep it in the AFC North tomorrow. And hopefully there's better stories to talk about, Jake, because we don't have game three of the NBA Finals until Wednesday.
Yeah, because of slackers.
Yeah, I know. It's made for TV like everything else. That's Roto Experts in the Morning. Up next, Carton and Friends on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Tomorrow, the King Scott angle is back. We talk to Kyle Schwarber, me and Jake in the second hour. Let's get it. Roto Experts in the morning. Have a good day.